Justin, do you know anyone in real life who calls him Mario?
I do, to be funny, just like I say library a lot. I tell my students we're going to the library, and I say Mario because I think it's funny. Lasquigi, because, you know, sometimes
you can't say Luigi anymore.
No, you can't.
Do you know this?
Because of you know,
the Reddit thing.
No, I didn't know the Reddit. I thought people liked the name Luigi because he was like a terrorist murderer, and then now we don't like him anymore.
No, we do, because of the thing he did that a lot of us are fans of. But on Reddit, they made a rule where any posts with the name Luigi in it are flagged for violence.
Oh.
And so including Luigi from Mario, including people who have the name Luigi, including the many people named Luigi throughout time and history who were not Luigi Mangione.
Careful, we're going to get flagged on our podcast services for this.
But so what everyone, but so basically all Reddit all of Reddit has said no, fuck that. And so they just are, every single post includes the word Luigi in it. So it's just like, yeah, just try and flag all of them for violence. Cause that's ridiculous. Right. Yeah. I mean, like regardless of how you feel about what happened there. Right. You know, that is a ridiculous thing to do, to flag a first name for that. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Just like the flag in the name Muhammad, which I don't know if is still the most popular name, but that's what the one takeaway from Superbad.
My takeaway from Superbad was...
don't open my lunchbox.
Yeah, I guess so. Can I tell you something? I've never seen Superbad. Does not seem like my kind of flick.
I also don't think it would... Maybe it would hold up, but I don't think it's going to be like one of them classic films that holds up.
No, well, I don't... Yeah, probably not. Every 5 years or so, there's like a comedy with kids in it that's like R-rated... That they're like, this generation's super bad. It was like a few years ago that this happened again. And I'm just like, God, like, I don't think so.
Did you watch that Booksmart film?
With Ayo Abadari and someone else? I've not seen it. Elena really liked it.
Yeah, it's with, I can't remember their names. It's with Abby from The Last of Us Part 2.
Caitlin Dever?
Yeah, her.
Oh, Caitlin Dever. And okay, I am thinking of, what movie am I thinking of? Ayo Abadari films. It's a similar sort of thing. Bottoms. Which is like Fight Club for women. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
didn't see it. They should keep like coming up with like the sequel, like Tops.
Tops.
Cutoffs. Midriffs. You know, like just the various cuts.
Tops the movie is just a Beyblade film. was Booksmart trying to be that?
It reminded me of like a Superbad type of movie. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. It's about basically like all these kids who like spent their whole like high school career trying to be as smart as they could to get in the best college, and they never like partied or anything. And then all their friends who partied got into like even better colleges.
And that's kind of funny.
Screw this. And then they try to have a night of partying, but they're just not like ready for it. So
sure. That's super bad ish. It seems.
Yeah.
I love media about kids that portrays what it's actually like to be a kid.
Yeah.
Cause obviously like media for children about children can't do that.
No.
But like, season one of American Vandal, I think, is the best written children of all time.
So good. So good.
Because I think what that show does is it has just like this incredible amount of like, oh, I know that guy.
That guy. I've seen that person before. I've been around that guy in high school before.
Yes, exactly. But the problem is, you know, if it were a movie, it'd be rated R. And kids couldn't like quote unquote watch it, right? Because it's for adults technically, but it's just one of those things where that speaks to children in my opinion. Like it speaks to what it is like to actually be a kid.
Oh, like a high schooler today. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly.
As someone who's been there, you know what I mean? I've been there. Yeah. I am there.
Yeah. I will say there is a, It can go too far in that direction, though, because I know, I don't remember who makes it, but one of like the guy who like writes and directs that show Euphoria, which I've never watched, is like, this is what it's really like to be a kid in high school. And it's like, all right, hold on. I'm not saying, like, I wasn't like cool. Like, I wasn't going to those parties exactly. And I know that sort of thing does happen. But no, guys, this is not what it's like to be a kid.
No, this, like, this is like what, like, the parents who want to disband the U.S. Department of Education think school is like.
100%. Where it's, yeah, it's like, no, not all children are heroin dealers. Like, a lot of them just play Fortnite.
No.
And a lot of them are on the chess team. And like,
speaking of a great topic, I have a student in my class who's doing a research project on banning marijuana for teens. And the solution to it is to not have it legal. And I was like, wow, what a nuanced position from a high schooler to say that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Because you think most of it would be the opposite direction, right? But
yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting the way that we almost got rid of cigarettes. Like, we almost did it. And then a bunch of companies just started like advertising to kids about like, hey, vape. Hey, what are those called? The tiny, like the little flash drive ones?
Jewels. Gotta get your Jewel, man. Gotta get your Jewel. Yeah. Gotta get your Vanilla Sky flavored Jewel. What's Vanilla Sky? Well, you gotta try it to find out.
One of my roommates in college was just like hopelessly addicted to his Jewel. And he told me to hold on to it. And no matter what, don't give it back to him. And so I held on to it for about an hour. And then he comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, can I have my Jewel back? And I was like, yep.
Do you want to know what it's like?
So I was like, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to. Well, I'm going to make you hate me because no. You know. Anyway, what are you saying?
Do you want to know what it's like to be a high schooler in 2025? Like, this is what the real TV show should be. It's you're a high schooler, right? You're walking into a bathroom. You see like four dudes sitting around just vaping in the bathroom. Yep. Yeah. And then you leave, and then a teacher goes in, and those same four students take their vape, and they throw it down the toilet, they flush it down the toilet, and they ruin all the sewage and the plumbing systems in your school because they just back it up with these vapes they're trying to get rid of. And then you can't use any bathrooms because they lock all the bathrooms except like one bathroom because they don't want people just vaping, and then they have security guards in there making sure they check people in. That is what it's like. That's the true euphoria that I deal with on a daily basis.
I was gonna say, that sounds a little too specific to be kind of just something you came up with.
Yeah, that's definitely, that's high school. Like, that would be a very engrossing HBO show.
See that? But like, that's what you do for season three of American Vandal. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like the whole, they can't go to the bathroom in the school, so they have to come up with alternative ways to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? And like, did you see this thing too? Sorry, I know we're going a little long talking about children and all this, but like, do you see this thing where like phones are banned at some school? And so a bunch of kids wrote a bunch of questions about like legitimate questions about like, well, okay, well, like what about this? Or like how would this work? You know what I mean? If we are truly banning phones at school, but then also like the kids are like taking it a step further and being like, okay, so let's say I have my phone taken away in like period one. If I replace every single part of it with a different piece of a different phone, is it still my phone? You know, like
the phone of Sisyphus. Theseus.
And the staff response was like, is it the same phone number? I'm like, yes. Fuck. It's Hitbox. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 233. My name is Peter Hunspatek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin, how are you?
Pretty good. To be fair, if they took my phone away from me, I'd probably bring in like my iPhone 8 and put that in the pocket and then still have my phone on my person.
Oh, yeah, just switch them out?
Like, how? That's easy. That's an easy get around. Easy get 100%. Around. Easy get around. But actually, I was going through my junk drawer and like I was looking through my old like flip phones and stuff like that the other day. Like, why do I keep them?
In case,
right?
You become a drug dealer and you need a burner.
Don't even have a SIM card for it. I do have my phone. My last time when I got my new iPhone, they're like, you can turn in your old iPhone. You can get like $150 credit, and I was like, no, I'll keep it. Why? Like, why do I want to keep it? I should have got rid of it. It didn't work. I was getting a new phone because it didn't work, but I kept it.
And $150 off, like, for something that doesn't work is pretty good.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, why did I do that? I don't know. I'm a broken human being, but I have them. I'm all lined up in my junk drawer.
I'll say this. The most infuriating thing, Elena got, like, the newest, like, Apple Pencil from her parents for...
Oh, like, drawing?
Yeah. It's like a stylus that has, like, I don't know, thing. I don't know what it does. I know she got it. She got it for Christmas. She's been using... I have like an iPad Pro. They got this as a gift as well. I'm not really like an iPad person, but I just have this thing. I have like an iPad Pro from like 2021 maybe. And she was like, "Can you help me set up this Apple Pencil with this iPad?" And I was like, "Sure." I was like, "Is it not simple?" And she's like, "Well, I looked it up and it says you just have to like put it on the side and it'll pair, but it won't." And I was like looking into it and I was like, "This pencil only works with the most recent 2 years of iPads."
Doesn't
matter that this is 3 years old and like was the highest end one they had. You know what I mean? It's like, come on now. This is crazy.
Like, this is just like a white stick. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now.
I don't know what it does, but she was going to use it for school and for work and all that. And
it's worth $129, the Apple Pencil Pro White.
Yes. And so we can look into trading in this iPad again. 3 years old, perfect condition. I barely use it because I just don't use iPads that much. Called Best Buy. They were going to give me $100 for it off of a brand new iPad that you need to, that would work with this Apple Pencil thing, which was like $1,100. And I was like, okay, that actually does not take that much off.
It's kind of cool. It's got haptic feedback, which is like, if you've ever like drawn on an iPad, it makes it feel more real.
And there's a speaker in it that makes it make pencil sounds. When you're like shading. Yep.
Can you change the sound to make like water droplet sounds? Like,
oh yeah, or to make it sound like a paintbrush. That's what paintbrushes sound like to me, by the way. Justin, here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Death Stranding 2 gets a release date announcement and trailer. The Last of Us 3 might not ever happen, and Xbox's handheld is reportedly coming out this year. We're going to talk about those headlines and more. But before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Janel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. This week, we're talking about my experience having a viral video and what that was like and all of the things that happened with that. I think that's going to be kind of an interesting conversation because I haven't really talked to anyone about it. I mean, like, I talked like here and there, but like, I don't even know how I feel about it. I'm excited to unpack it. So if you're interested in that, you can find us on patreon.com/hitboxpod. If not, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, can I take you to the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Two games in the Metacritic Roundup this week, Justin. The first is a game that I don't know how to pronounce. Is it Wonderstop? Or is it Wanderstop?
Wanderstop.
Wanderstop?
Wunderstip. Wunderstip.
Because it's like, I know that I have a Chicago accent. I didn't think I did, and I do.
Chicago. And I do.
I found out when I was writing a lot more, because I would misspell words because of how I pronounce them.
Give me a word you mispronounced.
Bot.
Bot. Yeah, bot it. How'd you spell bot?
B-A-U-G-H-T. And you know how sometimes you spell a word wrong and like even though it's one letter off,
yeah,
Grammarly is like, I don't even know what the fuck you were trying to say. And I'm like, but like
it's right.
Pot. I'm like, what am I doing here?
So now, decision is mine. That's the one.
It's when you spell wrong and it's just like it doesn't even
it's
know.
It's like I don't even know what you're trying to say here. I'm like, decision.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I don't know if I'm like, because Wanderstop sounds wrong.
Wunder.
But Wunderstop is not correct because that's an A in it. Either way, this is the newest game from the creators of the Stanley Parable, among other things. On the PC, it scored an 82. On the PS5, a 73. And it's unscored on the Xbox Series X. Justin, thoughts on Wanderstop?
Wanderstop? I literally don't know anything about it, but the fact that you say it's by the Stanley Parable people, and just this image here looks pretty fun. I mean,
So this was revealed at Summer Game Fest this past year. This is a blurb from the Noisy Pixel review. Wanderstop presents itself as a cozy tea shop sim, but underneath its colorful Ghibli-esque charm lies a deeply emotional narrative about change, loss, and self-discovery. With an engaging tea brewing system, loving characters, and stunningly vibrant art style, Wanderstop blends heartwarming moments with subtle existential themes. While a few technical hiccups hold it back, its storytelling and atmosphere make it an unforgettable indie gem. That's a 9 out of 10.
Damn.
That said, here's a 6 out of 10 from Digital Trends. In its own way, Wanderstop is the perfect mission statement for a bright-eyed studio starting its own path to self-discovery. It is a sincere celebration of our struggles and imperfections. They're not problems to run away from, but stones to sharpen our blades upon so we may win the next fight.
I'm looking at this, and this is a game that I would say maybe the wife would like.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tea shop simulator, and then also is like it tells like a narrative, like a emotional narrative. Go ahead.
The game that this reminds me of is I can't think of it. The one when you're on the boat, dead people, Spiritfarer. It not necessarily the same like theme and the same stuff, but like kind of has the kind of vibes of like a deep emotional story, but with like just kind of like management sim kind of elements to it. And a sword coming out of nowhere. Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't know if there's combat in it, but I do know that I think the main character is like a retired,
fighter.
He's like a retired knight or something like that. Yeah. Ivy Road Studio, the studio that made this is their first game, but it's run by Davey Reedon, who made the Stanley Parable and the Beginner's Guide, and then Carla Zimania, who made Gone Home and then wrote Bioshock to the Minerva's Den DLC, and has music by C418, who's the guy who makes all the Minecraft music.
Oh, boink. Boing, boom, boom.
So let me tell you about C418. C418 is like famous. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a big deal famous. Yeah. Because they make fucking the music in Minecraft.
Right, right. Probably more famous than what our parents would think, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
So I'm at the Giant Bomb offices, or like studio, for Summer Game Fest. And I'm talking to this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so what do you do? He's like, oh, I'm C418. And I was like, what's that?
I'm R2D2.
He's like, I'm a musician.
Oh,
and he's
no.
like, I'm a musician. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. He's like being coy about it. Like he's being really polite about the fact that I am fucking this up so bad.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm like a musician. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like, what kind of music do you do? He's like, oh, well, it's like a like kind of like electronic, like lo-fi stuff. It's like I do music for Minecraft. And it was really loud, so I didn't really hear him say that. So I was like, oh, cool. So like what kind of, you know, so like I'm like this, like at, like just asking him general questions as if I'm not like, again, talking to probably one of the most famous people I've ever met.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Cool.
Has there ever been a moment in your life where you're like really good at something, but you're like with people who don't like recognize that you're good at it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I am struggling to think of an example where like it's like that, where it's flipped, but totally.
That happens to me a lot, like being a speech coach, like I am, like I would say like I'm a pretty accomplished person, but like not everyone knows that, but I also don't want to like go out there and be like
how do you explain to people like, yeah, I run the most successful program in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, like how do you
like
do
the, like for
I don't want to say that, but like they're like, oh, that's so cute, like is it like a big commitment? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. a little bit
there, it consumes, right? Consumes all. Yeah, it consumes all. Thank you very much. It's like that meme about that guy in the corner of the party and everyone's dancing and it's like, they don't know I'm this. And then everyone's like, we know.
We know.
That said, I did not know. It was like, he doesn't know I'm C418. And I was like, what's that?
Yeah. Is that like connected to C2E2? Because I've been there.
but also they just fucking revealed that they were making this game and that it's a big deal that he's connected to this game. And I did not register any of that. I just look like, I mean, like, just what an ass. You know what I mean? I just look like such a dick. Well, no, not really, because I'm not doing it on purpose. But it just was that, like, this guy does not have a single clue about what is happening with this. So there you go. That's Wonderstop.
Is this the game you are interested in looking at?
Tentatively. The thing about it is, I think that what's his name? Davey Reedon. I think that he is an incredible game designer. I think the Stanley Parable is amazing. I think the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe, spoilers for Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe. The fact that it's the sequel to Stanley Parable, but is presented like it's just the like console port, is so incredible. And like all the bits of the sequel stuff are just amazing. And then the Beginner's Guide. Are you familiar with the Beginner's Guide?
Mm-mm.
It is a fictional, like, it's a story written from the perspective of someone who had a friend who was a game designer. And the friend who was the game designer made all of these games that didn't really make sense, that were very artful. So for example, there's a game where you are standing in like the atrium of like a museum, and you're waiting, you're standing, you can't move, you can only look around, and you're just in between like a gate basically that's going to let you in. And the gate is just closed for 2 hours. You can't do anything other than look around. And then after 2 hours, the gate opens and you just walk in, and then the game ends. And so it's like, hey, that like, that's not really a game, but it explores this idea of like, what is a game?
Yeah.
And it's told, I think the friend either like committed suicide or is no longer in the narrator's life anymore. And the story is basically like, he never wanted me to see these games, but I did. And I'm sharing them with you. And we're talking about like what causes a person to make art that is difficult to understand. And what it breaks down, like, what is game design? What is good game design? What is artful game design? Very interesting concept. Very different from Stanley Parable. Although that, I mean, because that is much more of a game, whereas like the Beginner's Guide is much, it's like a narrative, you know what I mean? That like, it's like a writing exercise. It's all fictional too. Like, none of that is real, but it does like ask some interesting questions in that regard. So I am a big Davey Reedon fan. This does not seem to be of the same kind of work, you know what I mean? In terms of being like, it's not like a meta examination of anything. At least that's what it seems like on the surface.
So I was scrolling through the Metacritic reviews, and this one is from IGN Benelux, which...
Where is Benelux?
You know, Benelux. I know you were just at Taco Bell today. You might have gotten the Lux Cravings box. I'm assuming that is not related. Benelux, is it?
The Benelux region of Europe, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I didn't know they had that. That's pretty cool. Anyway, it says, as a cozy game, Wonderstop has little to offer. It's simple, shallow, and gives you little to work toward. But that's exactly the point. Wonderstop forces both you and the burnout recovering Alta to slow down and reflect on yourself and the life you lead. That may not sound very cozy and might seem even depressing. Yet, well-written characters and Rendon's signature humor add a cheerful touch.
I laugh because, like, huh, that's an interesting game for me right now.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, that sounds like it might resonate well. I'm interested in this, but it doesn't immediately pop out as, like, oh, I got to play this because it has that, like, this specific flavor of gaming that I can only get from Stanley Parable and the Beginner's Guide. But,
right. I mean, and
I'm interested.
I think the reviews are pretty high on it too. And people who don't like it, I think they just don't like it because it doesn't seem to be very deep in terms of its
being a gameplay, like a game mechanics.
Yeah. Which is sometimes, you know, it's Stanley Parable. What's that game? Go where they tell you not to go.
Right. Like that is a game that doesn't, like, it's just a walking simulator, right?
Yeah.
But like, so yeah, same thing. Like, is it a great game? Well, it depends on what you look for in a video game. But Justin, the other game in the Metacritic roundup is Split Fiction, next game from Hazelight Studios, creators of It Takes Two and A Way Out, and Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons.
Oh.
This game scored a 92 on the PC, a 91 on the PS5, and a 92 on the Xbox Series X. Highest rated game of the year so far.
Piece of shit game, I can tell you that right now, right?
I have played about 6 hours of it, about halfway through it, with our good friend Josh. He was like, are you going to play this with Elena? And I was like, I want to. And he's like, play with me. And I was like, okay. So I was like, I will.
Yeah, you asked for it, so.
This game is amazing.
Oh.
I love this game. I think Hazelight, so like, I didn't like A Way Out very much. Maybe I need to give it another shot. I think I still feel that way about that game. But I think that, do you know how it's like sometimes an artist or a studio or something like kind of make something amazing as a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, for whatever reason, like all of these elements just like came together. Like but then when it like does a sequel or does a follow up, it's like, oh, you didn't, like, this was kind of an accident, like a happy accident.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was worried about with this game, where I was like, this is really going to, like, I think decide Hazelight's place as like, can you consistently make excellent multiplayer titles? And the answer is yes. This is a fucking amazing, amazing multiplayer game that I'm having a lot of fun with.
That's awesome. Okay, so about 6 hours.
Yes, about halfway through it.
Can you give me the very, like, simple plot?
It's luckily very, very simple. These two women are going to a book publisher. They both want to get their books published, but it's like a futuristic book publisher. I guess it's one of those things where, like, you can't put yourself in the position of the characters, because it's just like, I would never let this happen. Like, I would never let, like, if I went to a book publishing meeting and they asked me to put on a futuristic suit, a futuristic morph suit, and then get into a giant bubble, I probably wouldn't. I probably would say, excuse me, I'm not going to do that. So basically, one of the women, the blonde haired girl, Zoe, I think her name is like all about it, very excited. And then the other girl is basically just here to hopefully get something published because she needs the money. And she kind of tries to back out of everything that's going on. And in trying to back out, she falls into the bubble with the other girl. And so basically these bubbles are like mining your brain for ideas and like.
Like predatorily or like helping.
So here's the other thing. It is written a little bit better. I like the characters more than I like the characters from It Takes Two, but it is on the same writing level where it's like not great. So me and Josh are kind of not caring that much.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Cody.
Fine enough to be like, got it. You're just basically going through different pieces of fiction that the two characters have written. And so like the girl with the bob, I think her name's like Mo or Moy or May or something like that. Not May, because the other character's May from It Takes Two. But
what is it, May?
Mo, maybe? She like tends to write like darker, like science fiction stuff. And then the other girl tends to write like lighter, like fairy tale or like fantasy stuff. And so you're just like popping back and forth between the two. And what I think is really cool is I liked It Takes Two would have like mini games that you could just like find, but they were kind of uneven sometimes. It'd be like whack-a-mole or just fully play a game of chess. And it's like, what? Like, this, like fine enough side activity if we want to play a game of chess, but like, it didn't like mesh entirely with the rest of the game. This game does not have those. Instead, basically there are these like short stories or like unfinished ideas from each of the characters that are like these side areas that when you go into, it just drops you into a single gameplay idea for about 15 or 20 minutes. And then that's it. And then you're just back to doing the main gameplay scenarios and stuff like that. Which is cool, because it means that like you do something that's really fun for 15 minutes, and then as soon as you're like, all right, this is getting a little old, it's over. Does it make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so story writing, fine.
I'll say this. It has... Are you going to play this?
Yeah, me and the wife are planning on playing it within the next couple weeks.
I... won't spoil it for you. The single funniest thing I've ever done, I think, maybe, I mean, this is, you know, recency bias, perhaps. So I'll say one of the funniest sequences in my entire time playing video games is in this game. And I will say, you'll know it when you get to it. It's with a phone.
Okay.
You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you get to it.
Okay.
I like could not stop fucking laughing what you are doing and the context and the depth of it. When you play this, I want to talk to you about it.
Okay. Okay. Cool. I really hope we I want to like give the time this deserves without just doing it in the middle of stuff. So we're kind of hoping for spring break, but this looks fun.
It's amazing. It's great. And like the writing is fine enough. Like I said, like we're kind of just like passively watching as we're like chatting and you know, whatever, but like the characters are simple enough that that's all it needs, you know?
So if that's the case, the gameplay is just superb in terms of what you have to do with it then, would you say?
Yes. It does the same thing that It Takes Two does, where it introduces something and then you do that for a little while and then it jumps to something else. And then the second that starts to get a little old, you jump to another thing. I'll say the one thing about this that it makes it separate from It Takes Two is that a lot more of it is combat focused, which means that, like, I don't know if Elena, maybe she would. It really depends. What I'm saying is, like, I don't know if this is a game that, like, would come supernaturally to Elena because there's more combat in it.
And
that said, the combat is kind of puzzle based, where it's like, okay, the character with the katana has to hit when the boss turns purple, and it's like, okay, then me, the character with like the whip, has to use the whip on the barrels and throw it at the boss when it glows green. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess, is it harder?
I don't think so, because okay. I also thought It Takes Two was like surprisingly difficult for a co-op game, because co-op games I think tend to be a little bit easier because like they're a great way to introduce like gaming to someone, or it's like a great way to like play a game with someone who doesn't usually play games, you know? And so I was surprised at how difficult It Takes Two was, but Elena got, and I got through that just fine. So.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments when we were playing too, like, and this is not just me, this is like there's TikToks of this, like playing It Takes Two with your partner. And it's like, you're just waiting.
Oh yeah. At the end when you're just waiting for them to be able to do the platforming stuff.
Yeah.
I'll say this has similar stuff, but the platforming is a little bit easier. It's less of a platformer than that game was. Although those elements, it's still the same jump dash from that game, which I know is your shit. I am so tickled and charmed by this game. I think it's great.
Okay, cool. It's definitely up there for things I really, really want to play. And I'm sitting here too, also thinking, I kind of want to play Wanderstop.
Yeah, after talking about it, I'm like, maybe I do need to play this.
Yeah, I need something before Xenoblade comes out.
Yeah. Did you see this guy's like commenting under all of Charlie XCX tweets? Like, so you've got the XCX. Is that because you're such a big fan of Xenoblade Chronicles X? And he's like asking her about like builds and stuff.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I like Split Fiction. I love that they just announced it at the Game Awards, and it's like it's out in 3 months. And they did a trailer drop for it, like in maybe January or February. But that's all you need, because it's just like it's great. Like you know, you already know.
But I think that's so true. Like, I think Brothers was a good game. A Way Out is good. You know what
I
mean?
I thought that a Way Out was like, this is an interesting concept. It didn't work.
Right.
It didn't work, but I like the idea of this.
But then It Takes Two, like, hit.
And it's like, oh, this is a great game.
Yeah. Our former coaches basically always said, like, when you win something, anyone can win once. Can you do it again?
Mm-hmm. Oh, she taught me something that is so ingrained in me. And it was like that same concept of like, if you got it right one time, that could be a fluke. You have to do it again.
Yeah.
To make sure that it was like do it again. So that I know it wasn't a fluke, that you didn't just like accidentally happen on that. And like, I use that logic on myself so much.
But it's
so
true.
Much.
It's true. Because anyone can have the right string of luck and talent in order to do something or win something.
Correct.
But like to have two games like this that are not just okay, but like excellent game of the year contenders over 90s. You got something.
And again, they just were like, hey, this is coming out in 3 months. Here it is. Awesome.
Yeah.
Done. Cannot recommend Split Fiction enough. Mio is the other character's name, by the way.
Mio.
So it's a Xenoblade Chronicles
Mia.
3 reference. Was her name Mia?
I don't know. She had long hair and then short hair.
And then short hair and cat ears.
And then you could choose which one you wanted more of. And you
that is true.
Yeah, you picked the short hair. I think I picked the long hair.
Let's see here. This is a great, great gag for an audio medium. Let's see. Where is she? There she is. See her?
Oh, hello.
Because I sort of see her hand holding the little, like right there.
There she is. Oh, look at that. Look at
holding
that.
Holding the little thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, just very funny, very good for audio content for me to just point out something in my room.
Yeah, I also like how you just carefully looked left and right before you zoomed in to show it to everyone.
I just want to make sure. Yeah. Just want to make sure I wasn't, you know. Here's a different aspect ratio than you usually see me in.
Oh!
Doesn't it make you uncomfortable because it's a little too wide?
I don't know if it's too wide. I just see your fire detector, and I'm happy that you have one.
Oh, yeah. Me too. all right, back to the usual aspect ratio.
There you go.
Split Fiction, I love it. I knew I was going to like this game, though, and I think It Takes Two is such a good example of, like, is the game fun? Story is one of the worst things. That story is, like, one of the worst stories, I've ever, worst written. Like, the concept is fun, but, the writing is terrible. In that game. Would you agree?
In It Takes
Two? It Takes Two. Not the worst ever, but I think the writing is not very good.
I've read a lot of young adult fiction and it fits in that.
Yes, exactly. Where this is not really on par with what this concept I think needs.
Can you imagine Neil Druckmann writing the Split Fiction, It Takes Two, what his version of that would be?
Yeah, 100%. I can imagine a good mature version of that, and it's way better. You know what I mean? It's way better.
Or just
better.
Way more fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
That said, is the game fun? And the answer is yes. Good game then. You know what I mean? I think that's such a good example of that. And I think this game is written better. I don't know if it's written better, but I think it just is a little simpler. Mm-hmm. Of just they just get thrown into this experiment, and then now you're just exploring all these books that these people wrote. I like it a lot. I would highly recommend it. So
I'm highly excited to play it.
Justin, you play anything else?
Yeah, I actually pulled up.
He asks
Anthem.
Knowingly.
I actually pulled up Anthem for the first time in some time, and let me tell you something.
Anthem, the game by BioWare that isn't Mass Effect, that is a failed live service game that they made in 2019. Go on.
Have you ever played a live service game that is no longer very
active?
It's
dead. Full disclosure, you are playing this because I asked you to. Because I asked you to collect some footage for me. Because I thought this was I thought this game went free to play.
No.
And then I'm looking at it on the PlayStation Store. It's free on Xbox Game Pass because it's on EA Play or whatever it is. I don't have Game Pass. So I went over to PlayStation and I was like, well, surely this is free. And I was like, this is going to be $20. And I was like, fuck you. No. So I was like, hey.
Wait, how much was it? Was it 20 or more?
$20.
Oh, and not terrible, but I understand it's not. Yeah.
I would have paid $3 for it.
Did you go to a Five Below? They probably have it at the Five Below.
$20 on PlayStation for a game from 2019 that's failed.
Isn't it a PS4 game?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Dragon Age the Veilguard is free.
That tells you something right there.
Yeah, so I downloaded that, and I have not started playing it, but I will. I'm going to give it a shot. But, so what's Anthem like these days?
Okay, so not great.
I bet.
The game itself is fine. Like, I think there was potential for that to be a potentially good game. Like, to pull everything aside before I start, like, shitting on it, the combat's kind of fun. You basically feel like you're Iron Man, and I think they do a good job of creating that kind of feeling for you. So basically you play as one of these various mechs builds. It can be like the, you know, the fat, like bruiser, or the skinny, more agile one, or like the mid-ranged like warrior. And you shoot, you have alternate weapons that you can change if you get the upgrade for it. You have, you know, hold two weapons kind of thing. You know, it's like your live service shooter game. The cool thing is that you can at any point click the L3 stick and you can start flying around. Careful. And then if you click the R2 stick when you're flying around, you can then hover and then shoot in place as you're hovering. So you're not like incredibly overpowered. What they do is they have like a cooldown system involved with it, that the longer you're in the air, it starts to heat up until you eventually overheat, and then you have to go back on the ground and walk around. But throughout the world, they have water that if you're flying and you fly through like a waterfall or you fly in a pond, you will like cool yourself down, and then you can keep flying for extended periods of time if you do that, which is kind of a cool way to like limit your movement, but while also making the traversal fun, and you feel like you can kind of go anywhere at the same time. And it gives you that like cool angles to shoot from and everything like that. But as I was playing this game, one of the first things I did was go to the next mission in my campaign, because I started this game back during COVID. So I went back to the campaign that I started, and I went to start a mission. And then I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited. And I'm like, huh, is this like how it is? Is this how it's going to be? Like, am I just not going to be able to play it? Is this game even working still? And then I realized that the default setting is to play it with people. So I was matchmaking for these early game portions of it that no one was on. So I was just sitting there waiting for like 10 minutes. And I was like, okay. So then you could turn off the matchmaking. And the first thing it says is like, do you want to play this game with friends? It's much better with friends. And I was like, I would. But who is playing Anthem today? So then you just play it by yourself, and you can immediately tell that that game is designed to play with a squad in mind. I was able to basically go through all of Destiny and Destiny 2, basically this campaign solo. This game is not really meant for that. And
interesting.
One of the first enemies that, like the bigger enemies that you encounter, is this big mech thing with a shield. And it basically is like, you know, shielding, and you can't hit the shield, and you have to like get around and shoot at stuff. But the way it's designed, it really is designed to have one person distract it and then the other person to go behind it and shoot its weak spots. But when you don't have that person there to shoot its weak spots, and then they throw two at you at the same time, it's doable, but is it fun? And then so many of the tasks that you have to do are like collect six glowing orbs around there and put it in this thing, which if you're with four people, you can breeze through that pretty quickly.
Yeah, but on your own.
If you're doing it yourself, it's very quickly really redundant for you to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's automatically like kind of taken aback from the gameplay side of things, because you're doing it by yourself, or you could get a group together, I guess. But like at the same time, am I going to be like, hey, Peter, you got $20? You want to play Anthem with me?
Right.
You know, the story itself is like, I think, kind of interesting. It basically starts off like you're like basically in this military group, and you're on this planet where the Anthem is basically, it's some kind of like relic that like is creating chaos on the planet. And these like big monsters are coming, basically decimates your whole team. And then it's like 2 years later, and you basically become this freelancer without really going into explaining that kind of stuff. And then you walk around this basic area. And normally the great thing about a BioWare game is if you walk around your hub world, you get to talk to people and actually care about them and like know their cool characters.
Can I say, I did not realize that all of that would be in first person.
Yeah,
when I was watching the footage, I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, this hub is in first person. I thought it was in third for some reason. Go on.
Yeah, and it is kind of cool. I like when you jump into your mech suit, you're literally like jumping through it, and like you can see yourself going in it. You kind of feel immersed in that moment. I think it's kind of cool. Not that I want this game to be a first person shoot. I would throw up probably.
Totally.
But it is kind of cool that they have that jumping in thing. But then when you're talking to these people, these characters that you're supposed to like, like they have these just dead eyes that are looking at you. They have very little in terms of personality other than maybe like a quippy accent and stuff like that. And then all the missions, the story missions are basically the same thing. You are collecting stuff, putting in it there, and you're doing like these basic missions where you have to defend an area while things are coming at you.
Yeah.
And like you see that there is potential in this game. But like the thought of playing it, and specifically the thought of playing it alone in 2025 to get to the end of the campaign, is just something that's a little bit sad. But I think it's mostly sad just because it is, for all intents and purposes, a dead game that never got any more content than what they initially dropped with it. They never had the seasons that they promised. They never created these expansions and these other worlds. Did they even come out with the raid? I thought there was like a raid that they were coming out with and they never did, or something like that.
I don't remember. I remember that this game got canned really fast.
Yeah.
Because didn't they also, like, there was, like, a Christmas event that went up, and it just was up until, like, February or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just like, yo, like, come on.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, a game that could have potential, but, like, ultimately it's just this empty shell. Yes, it's empty now because no one's playing it, but I even feel like back in the day it was like, we're going to hope this sticks. And if you remember,
yeah.
I know people are much bigger Destiny fans than me. Destiny 1, when it first launched, was...
It had a bad launch.
It was bad. It was pretty light in content. I mean, the thing that saved it was just that Bungie shooting and that Bungie feel to it. And the fact that it was Bungie, I honestly believe if BioWare came out with that, I don't think it would have stuck through. But the fact that it was Bungie, I think people were like, oh, we trust it.
Yeah.
But it felt a lot like that, but even less. Even less.
I wonder, too, like... I'm not here defending Anthem necessarily, but I wonder if it came out today, if it came out today and like was like free to play, if it had a different life. Maybe not. Who knows?
I think it like an easy comparison to make with it, maybe not the best one, would be like Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League in terms of like how it feels a little bit. But I still think like even today, I think Anthem plays better than Suicide Squad did.
Sure.
Like the thing they got right is the feel. Everything else is, I think, not to the standards of what it should be for a game that was made by BioWare.
Yeah. Yes. It doesn't have any like conversation stuff, does it? Like
it does. It does. That like you will not like the same kind of thing that you get with like a morality system. In it.
Yeah.
You'll basically be talking to someone and then there's like you either hit the left trigger or the right trigger and it's like the kind of asshole option or the empathetic option, but it doesn't necessarily feel like it like changes the outcome of anything. And granted, I played the game 5 hours. It's not like I've gone into this thing and like put, you know, years in it, but it like doesn't create like any kind of like moral thing for your character. But like when you're talking to people, you get different like faction points. When you make conversation things that I'm sure just gain extra weapons and things like that, but it doesn't feel like you're actually making meaningful progress in the world. Or even to your character and how you develop it. Even you'll find as you play Dragon Age, I feel like they've neutered that aspect of it in Dragon Age Veilguard as well.
Interesting. I am excited to play that to see sort of what's up with that because, in replaying like bits and pieces of Mass Effect, I'm like, oh damn, I like Mass Effect a lot. Like it's not a series I think about that often, but it is a game like that is a franchise that I do like in the way like that stuff is handled. So I'll be interested to see how that lives on in Dragon Age when I play some of that at the very least. But thanks for playing Anthem for me.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was a fun little like diversion. I mean, like it was a good thing to go back to, and I think now that I went back to it with my mature video game senses that I developed through a pandemic, I realized I've never need to go back to it.
Sure, that makes sense. Justin, you want to talk about the news?
Oh yeah, let's do it.
Justin, according to Windows Central.
Oh.
There has been a leak or was it, let's see here. I think it was a leak that we heard, two things about Xbox. The first is that it's handheld standalone project, whatever that is, that we've heard a little bit about, that we've heard Phil Spencer say that they're interested in making, apparently is going to be on store shelves this holiday season. So, you know, less than a year at this point until we are able to potentially get our hands on an Xbox handheld gaming console. I am curious as to what that is like. Is it a Steam Deck situation, a Switch situation, where it is fully running those games natively? Or is it a PlayStation Portal situation where it's cloud streaming and... Oh, wait, didn't they introduce... No, it's not native on that. They introduced something new for the PlayStation Portal. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they have basically, you can stream games on it, like from your library, not like from the PlayStation Extra, like not the essential one, like the premium membership, the highest one. You can instantly stream those games on it.
Oh, yeah, it's like cloud streaming for those games.
Yeah, that you don't own.
And that you don't, yeah. Also, yeah. And also streaming from your console. So we don't know exactly what this is yet. What do you think about this? This is half of the story.
The first half of the story, I think it's perfect. I mean, this is, I'm the audience. Hi, Justin.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm the audience for this. I would assume it's going to be a streaming device, just because if you're thinking about all that they're doing with like their television and their streaming functionality and the apps that they have already on that kind of stuff, I think it doesn't, I'm no designer, no engineer here, but I don't think it necessarily takes that much to like expand that a little bit more to have Game Pass on a device like this without having to have people buy stuff. Now, they could have something where you could download it because, I mean, it is Microsoft. They do have, you know, computers and stuff that they are, you know, they do and they deal with, you know. So, like, I think, like, I could see it being something more like the Steam Deck, but I don't think that would be the target audience for them. Their whole thing is about making it as easy as possible. Like, how can we easily get this in people's hands without being a huge barrier? And I already do think that their streaming service is better than the streaming service that we get for PlayStation.
I agree.
And I think it would just make so much sense with their Game Pass library. I mean, to $15, you spend $200 on this Xbox thing, and for $15 a month, you get Game Pass on the go.
Well, it's 20 now.
All of it? Whatever, 20, whatever it is.
But still.
Yeah. Like, that's...
I'll say this. Jez Corden, the author of this article, and someone who is... a relatively reliable source for this sort of Xbox news, speculates that it is going to be similar to a Steam Deck situation. That is his speculation, but could go either way. You know what I mean? We really don't know. Also, the code name for this is Kenan, which I think is just very fun.
And they have the streaming version will be called Kel.
Yeah, I see. Now we're talking, right?
Yeah.
Good burger.
But it would make sense, too, that it would be more of a Steam Deck thing, because then it could be a little bit... It's not just for Xbox things. You could get that on there, but you could also get PC games on there. You could also do more with it other than it just being a gaming thing. So it really depends. I'll be interested to see what they do with it, because ultimately, I don't foresee Xbox being like, we're going into handheld. I see Xbox being like, we're going to have another place to play games.
Which, in my opinion... is why this sort of thing and like the PlayStation Portal, for that matter, are not, I don't see being long term, big, huge, successful things that take these platforms to the next sort of step. You know what I mean? Obviously, the PlayStation Portal has sold well and is a solid platform. You have been a testament to that, right? But like, PlayStation isn't getting into handheld gaming. You know, this is a peripheral, right? Something for, it's a niche audience. They're not saying everyone who plays PlayStation is going to want this. The Steam Deck, I think, is where it's like, if you play games on PC, why not take your library to go when you go on flights? You know what I mean? Like, to me, if you are a PC player, that is a great purchase to have, and that's going to further your experience with all that. I agree with you I don't think that they're going all in on handheld devices. I think they're just making a handheld device. Which I wonder what that means then, if anything, for if they're going to invest in more of this sort of thing.
And the funny thing for me, if this is a Steam Deck, I probably won't buy it.
Really? Why?
I feel like if something like that, it's going to be more money. And I would probably
right, $400, I'm assuming ish.
Right. I would probably just use that to play streaming Game Pass games on it. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, we were talking a little bit before recording, I use my Backbone to play stream my Xbox games right now. And while it's not like the perfect thing, I really don't have that much issue with it. And I think it works as well as I want it to work. And I don't need to spend that extra money. However, if it is something that's like a $200, and I know this sounds stupid and I know it's dumb to say this, but if it's like a $200 thing that can upgrade significantly the experience that I have, that's not necessarily cost prohibitive to make me want to upgrade my Backbone to playing it like I play my Portal. Because if I have like the option right now, Portal versus Backbone for PlayStation, I would never touch my thing again. I love my Portal. I love that thing.
Yeah.
And I don't need all the other bells and whistles that I would have on a Microsoft thing anyway.
Sorry. Are you saying that $200 is the right price to upgrade your
Backbone
sort of setup?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, to get a larger screen, a better controller, and that kind of stuff, and do what I do probably even better than how I do it, I would be very interested in doing that. Whereas, I think if I buy a $400 to $500 system that has different like memory cards and stuff like that, that is probably going to be out of date in two, three years or something like that. Yeah. I think that's not, I don't want to invest in that PC. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I've turned down purchasing a Steam Deck because I'm like, am I really going to use this? This is not going to be my indie device. I don't fucking play indie games. I want to play my consoles more, and I would do that more with a better streaming setup.
Yes. 100%. I think that makes a lot of sense based on your personal,
my unique play style.
No, but it's so interesting in knowing you. You've really opened my eyes to like the way that people engage with games differently than I do. I wouldn't engage with games like that, but that's just because I don't need to, you know what I mean? Like I my preferences totally work for how I'm set up right now. Obviously you have a different setup and a different preferences and a different life than me. Right. And so like, it's been interesting hearing like, when they announced the PlayStation Portal, I was like, who would buy this? And it was like, Justin would buy this. And Justin is going to explain every single week why it's the best purchase he ever made. You know what I mean? And I really appreciate that perspective because I would just be like sitting there like, how is this selling? Well, like PlayStation's like, we're really happy with the PlayStation Portal sales. I'm like, why? Who bought it?
Did I ever tell you that when I first got it, I was sitting there playing Spider-Man 2 and like get my platinum on it, but I was sitting in front of my TV while also playing on my Portal controller. Like I was playing the game, looking at the Portal instead of the TV, but I was like doing like the picture in picture thing for no reason other than the fact that I could. And it was kind of fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is different. And I think we talked about this before. It's not something I'd recommend anyone get, but if you know you would, if you are a Backbone player, you would play this.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. So the other half of this story here is that the next generation of Xbox hardware is in full production and that it is coming in 2027, so 2 years away. We don't have really any information on what that looks like and like what we can expect from it, other than it has been, according to this article, fully greenlit all the way up to CEO Satya Nadella. For now, I understand that Microsoft's next-gen hardware plans include a premium successor to the powerful Xbox Series X alongside its own Xbox gaming handheld and several new controller options. Tentatively, these new consoles devices are slated for 2027. So, not much to go on as to like what we can take from this. We've known that they are working on something. Phil Spencer said it in one of their podcast things. What is it, like it, to me, it makes sense that 2027 is when this would happen. That's 7 years after the launch of the Xbox Series X. I think that is how the Xbox One, this Xbox One was 8 years, 7 or 8 years, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
to me that seems like a reasonable thing. At the same time, it makes me feel like I'm turning to dust and ancient and just that time is moving too fast. But also I'm kind of like, I feel like these consoles didn't even really get off the ground that much. You know what I mean? Like the PlayStation 5, I think a little bit more because it did have a handful of like true PlayStation 5 exclusives, right? Like I think about Returnal, I think about Ratchet and Clank, I think about Spider-Man games, or I guess just the second one, right? It had a handful of those that did feel like PlayStation 5 games. I don't necessarily feel that way about Xbox, but also the part of that is because Xbox is so built around the idea of like anywhere, like you can play games anywhere. So
I think it's one of those things, like even you're talking about the PlayStation 5, I think we're in a place right now where a lot of the reasons why you would upgrade to a PS6 or Xbox 920 or whatever the hell they're going to call it, or 720, is because like under the hood, it's the stuff that we don't necessarily see as gamers, the demanding, you know, like graphical prop rendering stuff like that. Like that's the stuff. And it's not like it's going to look better. It just allows them to do more and different things with it without having, I guess, to optimize their system and stuff like that. Because, I mean, yeah. You go back to the PlayStation 3, The Last of Us looks great on that.
Yeah.
Right? And it still looked good on the PS4, and it still looks good on the PS5.
Yes.
Now, you can hold up the most recent Last of Us Part 1 versus The Last of Us on the PS3, and you see a difference. But it's such like a gradual difference between those things. You don't necessarily notice it, but the technology of the PS3 could not do Part 1 because it just doesn't how this happens anymore. I think go ahead.
Go ahead. It's a thing, too, about just like it wasn't meant to look photorealistic,
right?
It was just designed like, you know, they couldn't do it, just wasn't able to handle it. Then it looks fine, it looks good, go on.
Yeah. And even like a game like the Switch is like Nintendo games aren't known for the graphical fidelity, but they obviously need to have a technology upgrade to stay like in line with everything else, whether it becomes the next Unreal Engine or whatever. It's that stuff just needs more power to run eventually to keep up with it. So I don't think it's going to be like the PS6 comes out and we're going to be like, damn, this looks like a me standing here. I just think it's going to make everything run so much easier and better under the hood that it's going to allow more ease with developing games.
I agree. To me, it seems like someone said this about the PS5 Pro. The idea of like, oh, these consoles are becoming like phones now.
Mm-hmm.
Where the upgrades are for people who really care about having the absolute best thing that's on the market. And then even then with the PS5 Pro, that's not always the case. There were issues with the Star Wars Outlaws and Silent Hill 2 and a handful of games those games looked worse on those consoles, whatever. But like the point remains, but like this is an incremental upgrade. This is not some huge change. And I think that's just where we're headed, right? What can you show me about the Xbox Series X that's going to be like the next Xbox that's going to be mind-blowingly better than the Xbox Series X? Really nothing. You know, I think a different controller would be interesting, but like that's a controller. That's not, you know, that's not a whole new thing. I wonder what they can do to get people to buy these things. Because I also, wasn't Sony upset about the PlayStation 5 Pro sales? They were like, this is not, did not meet expectations.
What are they expecting?
That's the thing. It's like, you did not give anyone a legitimate reason to play these things. You're like, you look at The Last of Us Part 2. It looks amazing. And I'm like, first of all, it looked amazing on hardware that came out in 2013. Second of all, you're talking about a game from 5 fucking years ago. It looked great then. It looks great now.
You were talking about a new controller. Can I tell you something? In my recent life, I really like the PS5 controller.
You said in a distant life?
No, I love this controller. I realized this recently. And you know what they just need to do to fix to make this the best controller of all time? It's really simple. Do you see where this thing is?
Yeah, you want it to be offset?
If you move it here, and then you move this here, best controller of all time.
I really like the offset sticks. Really like the offset sticks. The Xbox Series X controller is my favorite controller ever. I like the PS5 controller, the DualSense. It's the best PlayStation controller to me, but yeah.
Right, but all they would have to do to upgrade it for me, that's the only thing. I like the triggers better on this. I like the feel in my hand. It fits in my hand better. Just move that joystick right here where my thumb rests comfortably. Right there.
Right there. I agree. I totally agree. Oh, Justin, Respawn apparently was working on an untitled FPS and it has been canceled. It was a multiplayer game. Apparently this was more of the Star Wars stuff, and maybe it's just been officially canceled. That's what Jeff Grubb said. But just the news broke that, like, hey, this has been canceled. And I thought it was worth mentioning here. What do you think about that?
This is like one of those things that's not a sad story for me. This is, you have a company that has had a ton of success and a ton of resources that they can cut a game before it becomes a massive money grab or becomes a massive disappointment for them. Because I mean, they have had so many hits recently that, yeah, it's sad you're not going to get this game and the people working on it aren't going to be able to have it, but it doesn't ring to me like, oh, they're cutting it because they're in trouble. You know what I mean?
To me, I agree. Like, I think about, like, this has been known for a while that they're working on something like this. Cutting this before it's announced means that they are having problems maybe early. I don't know if it's development problems or if it's budgeting problems or what, but they identified something early. And to me, doing this hopefully means that people are not losing their jobs.
Correct.
Because they're going to pivot and be, you know, working on something else. And that the problems with this, again, whether it's developmentally or budgeting or whatever, were identified early so that you don't get a situation like with Wonder Woman, where it's just like spinning and spinning and spinning, being worked on, and then that whole studio gets closed. You know, I'm not apologizing for the parent company, for WB, for doing that, but I am saying, like, I do understand how it got to that point, based on how expensive these things are. So,
and it's like you're creative. You've worked on stuff sometimes that you're like, this is not going to be good no matter how much more time I put into it.
Yeah. Where it's just like, you know what? Let's scrap it. Let's move on.
Right. Let's do something new. Like, we could sit here and work on this all day long, but I think at a certain point, doing something new is going to be better for us.
Yeah. Speaking of being shut down, Ballistic Moon, a studio that I was not super familiar with, until someone was like, oh, these are the people who made that Until Dawn remake. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. What happened to them? They have been closed down. It is unclear how many people are still working there. Apparently, there were layoffs last year where 40 people were let go, and then now 20 people were let go. And it seems like there are only one or two people left at the studio. So it's like, what does that mean? I believe were they owned by Sony? I don't think they were, but they did work with Sony Interactive Entertainment to publish the Until Dawn remake. So there you go. What a bummer. Are you kidding me? Make a game and everyone gets laid off regardless of if it's successful or what.
And like, that's a very different type of like situation to think about too. Two very different like situations with companies like stopping stuff, you know, like it's sad.
And it's so irritating too, because it's like, was Ballistic Moon, I don't know this, this is speculation, was Ballistic Moon itching to say, let's remake Until Dawn?
No.
Or was this project handed to them by Sony Interactive Entertainment, saying, we've got an Until Dawn movie coming out, we need a remake because the original game is from 2014. Let's remake it. And they're like, all right, great, we'll do the project. And they do the project, and then Sony's like, okay, this was a disappointment. Goodbye, everyone. You know?
Yeah.
Again, that's speculation. I don't know who's in charge over there or what. Maybe there were other issues. I'm not sure.
And it's like one of those things, too, with a remake like that. One of the purposes and one of the reasons I have a game like that is you are having a company test some new graphic systems out and things like that, and they're getting ready for the next thing. And when literally that is not the case because they closed the studio afterwards. What was the point?
I mean, the point was The Last of Us Part 1 sales increased by like 400% after the first episode of that TV show came out.
Right.
They're banking on this Until Dawn movie being good, which I saw the trailer. I think the best case scenario is if it's really bad, which looks like they're on the right path. But like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know, truly what was happening here? What was the intention here? Obviously to tie in with the game, with the movie, but like The Last of Us show is an HBO drama. That's going to be big. Some Blumhouse ass looking movie for Until Dawn, a movie from literally 11 years ago, a game from 11 years ago. Like, who was, sorry to make everyone feel old, but like, who was, like, what were you expecting that to be? Were you expecting that to do Last of Us numbers? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just a bummer. Speaking of Last of Us and Intergalactic, let's talk Last of Us first, because there's this big Variety interview that they did with Neil Druckmann and I think Craig Mazin, the directors. No, not because only Neil Druckmann. It is also with Craig Mazin, the directors and producers of The Last of Us TV show. They talked about a lot of stuff. I think in this article is when they said that Abby's not going to be jacked because the show is more about the characters, which I think is a silly statement because I think Abby being jacked is part of her character. Doesn't matter. This is, let me just read this to you verbatim. Then there's the long whispered possibility of The Last of Us Part 3. I was waiting for this question, Druckmann says, sighing when I bring up the prospect of a third game. I guess the only thing I would say is don't bet on there being any more of The Last of Us. This could be it. So this obviously is different from what we've heard in the past from Neil Druckmann, right? He said like, yeah, you know, the script is done for Last of Us 3. Or I don't know if he said it's done, but he definitely said he was working on it. I think if I'm remembering correctly, last we heard too, they had a pitch that they pitched this to Sony, and you know, they're working on Intergalactic now. That's their next game. Sounds like the optimism for Last of Us 3 may be gone. Might be because he is focusing on the TV show. Might be because the studio is just like, we are just moving on to other things. What do you think of the idea of, hey, this is done?
I think if you're do we know how old Druckmann is? Because
we have the technology.
There is something out there that you really have to consider the amount of time left for him. Not that he's going to die here or anything
like
that.
But just at a certain point, like, these games take 8 years to make.
Right.
How many more of these does he have in him?
Right. So if Intergalactic comes out in 3-4 years, right, he'll be almost 60. Is he really going to spend?
He's 46.
He's going to be almost 50. Is he going to then start another game at that point to be the head creative lead on that? And is he going to be the one to take that over? Theoretically, so go ahead.
I think it is worth pointing this out, that Neil Druckmann gets assigned being the like creative lead for The Last of Us. And like, he gets, like, people say like, oh, he created The Last of Us. He didn't. I mean, he did, but it's not just him. The Last of Us 1 was directed by two people. It was him and, where is it? Bruce Straley. Bruce Straley is forgotten in the credits of The Last of Us TV show. It says created by Neil Druckmann, which is insane to me because it's like, hey, Bruce Straley actually had a lot of like the central ideas for The Last of Us. He had the idea that there should be like more zombies other than just the clickers. It's like, that's a pretty big thing. You know what I mean? Like, there were all sorts of things that he did. And then with The Last of Us Part 2, Straley was not involved, but it was co-written by Hallie Gross.
Yeah, I think Hallie Gross.
And from what I've seen from in the interviews and stuff like that, Hallie Gross wrote the bulk of the things that I think are the really standout moments from The Last of Us 2. So, like, I don't necessarily think that him saying, like, hey, I'm not going to be the lead on this, is a huge problem, because it seems like he largely has not been the only lead on these projects. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, he gets a lot of credit for like Uncharted stuff, but co-created with Amy Hennig, who is now running that studio that's making that game Fair Games, which is never going to come out. But it's like a live service thing. But you know what I mean? Like I think like Neil Druckmann, yes, has been attached to a lot of these things, but he largely has not worked alone. And so that like, so him, if they start up, you know, Last of Us 3 when he's 50, like, you know, maybe he doesn't need to be the guy who's there, who is the full lead on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I would even say on top of that, like, it doesn't have to be Naughty Dog's next game after Intergalactic 2. Yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, we're going to be in a world, Peter, where we're in our 50s.
Oh, gosh.
And all of a sudden we're sitting there watching Summer Game Fest. Jeff Keighley is a head in a jar.
I was going to say, it's being beamed into our brains, but go on.
And all of a sudden we just hear some like nice little guitar music playing. And an old wizened Ellie is sitting there playing the guitar without fingers, because she's evolved beyond that. She can play guitar excellently, missing two fingers. Yeah. And or she's playing it and we're missing notes every once in a while because she's just but it sounds beautiful because she found a song that she can play. And then it says Last of Us Part 3. Can you imagine?
Generations.
Can you imagine? Generations.
Colon, sins of the father.
But can you imagine how much that would hit?
Yeah, of course. Like that's the thing. I agree. Like, they don't need to do The Last of Us next if it's not what they're doing, if it's not ready, you know?
Like, I think that would be like so cool, and they don't have to rush through it. I think in a world where Intergalactic wasn't a thing, I think there would have been a push to do a Last of Us Part 3 because of the TV show sooner.
I agree.
But now it's going to be 8 years from now. This game isn't coming out like in time for them to use the same actresses to play these characters again. You know what I mean?
That said, they've said like, well, you know, Last of Us Part 2 is going to be like 3-4 seasons of TV. And like, I'm just like, I'm out. You're ruining it. It's over. It's over, guys.
They got two.
I guess so. Oh, yeah. Yes. I agree, because like there's a clean.
Yeah, they got two seasons, because I still think that would be an interesting narrative choice to end it at that middle part where they have their confrontation, right?
I do too, because I think that to me, what works about that game is you immediately go into the Abby stuff and you immediately have to be like, fuck this. And then you're like, well, this is quite interesting.
Right.
The interpersonal drama here is quite compelling. You know?
And like we've talked about this before, the moment when you see her fuck it upgrade tree, and you're like,
uh-oh. This is not just a flashback? Right. But like, that's what works about, and that's why to me, I'm like, I really don't think this is going to work. I'm interested. Now, I'm willing to be wrong. They could go other ways with it, but yeah, what's up?
If I were a storyteller,
yeah,
you could do and that. Yeah. Thank you. You could do that mid-season and still have the confrontation be the end of season one. You could still have the moment where we go into Abby's story before we like go to their fighting
It's like a theater.
So that could be how they make it work somehow. There would be a way to do that narratively, but yeah. I don't know how hard they're going to work on this.
And that's why the first season of the show, not to just talk about The Last of Us TV show right now, as we've done a lot, the first season of the show leads me to believe that they are not going, that they are going to just try and adapt it pretty much beat for beat. They're going to flesh some stuff out a little bit more, as they've explained. But like, I thought that the first two episodes of the show, the first episode of the show is like phenomenal. I was like, what a great interpretation. Second episode, I was like, okay, you just got to do the plot stuff. Great. And then the third episode was that Nick Offerman episode, which is just like one of the best hours of television I've ever seen. And then they just did a full on, just scene for scene, shot for shot, for the most part, adaptation of the show, of the game.
Right. Can you make me a promise, Peter?
And so for me, that makes me think that The Last of Us 2 as a TV show is going to be done very similarly. Yes, I will make you a promise.
You will love this season.
If
they have a Nick Offerman like episode for the PlayStation Portable girl.
Oh,
can you imagine? They give her this whole backstory, and then it just ends.
She learns to love She learns to love Hotline Miami, which she's playing. That's what she's playing.
It's the Vita, right?
It is a Vita, yes.
But if they make you care about her the way you cared about Nick Offerman, you have to say that's the best fucking TV series ever.
I would be able, I would say, like, I see what you're doing here. Because that's what the, because, hey, that's what the game is. Right? It's like, hey, man, like, these guys have their own shit going on. It's like, kill the garrote wire, you know what I mean? And, like, that's what the game is. And I like the game.
I want to watch just that episode again.
I am really interested in watching the show again. I have a video idea, but I have to wait until the second season comes out. And I have a lot to say. I'm interested on. I'm interested in. I feel like I have still yet to really explain to you or anyone, like, why I just don't like it, why it just doesn't work for me. And I think that if I actually sit down and, like, write it out and, like, make it, you know what I mean? Like with, like, specific examples and things like that, I think, you know, I'm not trying to change anyone's mind, like what you like, I don't care. But, like, I feel like I just have not made anyone understand where I'm coming from with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, like, people lose their minds when I'm like, I think the Uncharted movie is a better adaptation than the Last of Us TV show. I said that once in a room full of people, and it was like everyone stopped talking and looked at me. And I was like,
One's an adaptation.
They're both adaptations.
Well, yeah.
I think the Uncharted movie captures the spirit of Uncharted better than the Last of Us TV show captures the spirit of The Last of Us.
Like, I don't know if they have this name. The Last of Us TV series is like a remake.
It is.
And then
it's a live action remake.
The Uncharted movie is more of an adaptation.
So it's a stupid popcorn flick.
Right.
In the same way that those games are stupid popcorn movies. They're just like in one ear, out the other. I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's fun.
Yeah.
Just never think about it again. Same with that movie. Some details, though, about Intergalactic have come up. Sony made a video called Creator to Creator with Neil Druckmann and what's his name? Alex Garland. Alex Garland is a creator of Ex Machina, creator of the movie Annihilation, one of my favorite films of all time. Also made Civil War, which came out last year, which I thought was kind of a miss, but that's just me. But Neil Druckmann and Alex Garland talked to each other. Alex Garland also created 28 Days Later. And directed the Dread movie that came out in like 2012. And so Neil Druckmann and Alex Garland had a chat about how they sort of influence each other going back and forth. And some details about Intergalactic, the Heretic Prophet came out. I'm just going to read you these bullet points from Okami Games. Set 2,000 years in the future, alternative universe where the timeline deviates from ours in the 1980s, a mysterious new religion forms around this time and starts to take hold. Naughty Dog spent years working on the timeline and how the religion changed throughout the years. Naughty Dog's previous games have always had an ally / companion, so they wanted you to feel lost and alone in a mysterious universe this time. Neil Druckmann said, I really wanted to make a game about faith and religion, but also about feeling lonely. No one has heard from this. No one has been heard from on this planet for 600 years. Neil Druckmann specifically calls out Half-Life 2 and the Monkey Island games as some of his favorite examples of storytelling, mentions the fact that Half-Life 2 has less hand-holding and trusts the player to put pieces together themselves. Neil jokes, with The Last of Us 2, we made certain creative decisions that got a lot of hate, and a lot of people love it. A lot of people hated it. The joke is, you know what? Let's do something that people won't care about as much. Let's make about a game about faith and religion. And the game still has a ways to go, according to him. What do you think?
I'm interested in this.
Of course.
You had me at Monkey Island. I know that was pretty far down on this tweet, but...
You had me at Naughty Dog.
Yeah, well, that is true. I trust... Yeah. I would trust Naughty Dog. But if I'm trying to think of, like... I like to... It sounds like they're doing something different. And it looks like they're doing something different. I mean, we've seen the one little, like, 2-second shot of gameplay from it, right? With, like, the little sword thing and more of, like, an action-y game, combat game. I think that's interesting. I don't want just another Uncharted. I don't want just another Last of Us. I want to see Naughty Dog going back to something they haven't done in quite some time. This, like...
I totally agree.
Third person.
It seems like they're interested in doing something new. And like just, like, totally different.
And one of the things I love about The Last of Us is the world of The Last of Us.
Agreed.
That they created. And they're going to do this again with a sci-fi story that I'm already fucking, like, just based on what I've heard, it seems awesome.
Yeah, it looks cool. It looks very cool.
Right? And, like, the idea about, I want to make a game about faith and religion, but also about being lonely.
It's interesting.
Right? Like, I think that's so cool. So it's such an interesting concept. I love science fiction. I love Naughty Dog. I love Monkey Island. I want it.
I think the thing about Naughty Dog that they do really well is they write very, very human, relatable stories. You know what I mean? Like, I think the thing that they get is it doesn't matter the context. If you tell a story about people and if you care about the people, that's what's interesting. So I'm not a man on a spaceship in a Porsche spaceship or whatever the fuck, you know, 6,000 years in the future. I'm just a guy. Well, I have feelings about religion and loneliness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. Sure. I'm down, you know?
Yeah.
I am very excited for this. I'm excited. The lead actress I liked in The Last of Us, I thought she was very good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she didn't have much, but she was one of the more memorable side characters, in my opinion. I'm excited for this. Do you think, like, when you audition for these games, you know, like, a lot of these actors are, like, not recycled, but, like, you audition for The Last of Us 2, and they're like, okay, you know, we're going to cast you as, like, a side character, but we got this other game we're working on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we think you might be the person for.
I can't wait. It's coming out this year, right? Drafting it right now.
It should be right now. It should be coming out real. You know, they're just gonna on a random Sunday just drop the release date, and turns out it's coming out in 3 months. I'm talking about Death Stranding 2: On the Beach.
Oh, that sounds like a fun vacation.
So at South by Southwest in Austin this weekend on Sunday, Hideo Kojima showed up and showed off a new trailer for Death Stranding 2. It's 10 minutes long. I watched the whole thing. I got goosebumps. I'm not kidding. I shed a single tear.
Oh.
I'll say this. I had a rough day this week today, based on work and things. I watched this right before all of the horrific shit happened with me at work.
Oh.
And so, like I said, I just shed a single tear. I was like, "This is beautiful. The world is maybe we're gonna be all right," you know. And then all that happened. But yeah, this is coming out in fucking June 26th, excuse me. I'm in. I'm ready. And you know what? Now that we have a release date, Justin, you know what that means? I'm downloading Death Stranding tonight. I'm starting it this week.
Oh, dude. I am so interested to hear your journey.
I bet I'm going to like it. I think I'm going to like it. I could not believe how into this trailer I was. And I was like, I do not think this is going to be a game that's going to pick up really well if you've not played the first one.
Peter, I don't think the game picks up well even if you played the first one. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. But it's just so wild. Haze Light did this, and then now Kojima Productions has done this, where it's just like, hey, here's a game that you really want to play. It's out in 3 months. You know, like, what are you doing in June? Like, that's right around the corner for the most part.
Let
you
me
know?
Tell you what a perfect time for me. Perfect time. Then, right, for me to sit right down when I have nothing but time to walk around slowly. This game, Peter, the story is whatever, right? It's this Kojima stuff. But just walking from point A to fucking point B is so much fun.
I'm excited to finally have the excuse of, well, now I have to play Death Stranding.
You got to play it. You got to play it.
Yeah.
It is, I think the fact that you're looking at this game and you're like, oh, like, this looks good, and you shed a tear and you get the emotion by it, you're going to get that. Because one of my favorite stories about this is when I'm sitting there on the couch playing it while my wife was doing something, and then she's just sitting there like watching it. She's like, I don't know what's happening, but I can't stop watching it.
Yeah. I think I'm excited. This will be my first Kojima game, first of all.
Oh.
Second of all, It is my understanding that Kojima games feel like that trailer did, where it's just like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
How did it make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where like, no, the specifics don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They don't matter. What did you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how it seems he runs his games. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. So I have a question. The guy who put the headband on that looks like Solid Snake. That's just a reference to Solid Snake, right? Or like, I don't know anything. I don't know anything about Metal Gear.
Metal Gear.
Was there any like reference that I missed other than just like, hey, this guy looks a lot like Solid Snake?
I think that's kind of the point. Like, I think it's just him being meta to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not like one of those like breakdown of the trailer experts to know. Though, let me tell you, I'm going to send you the most frozen still from this game. Let me see right here. Perfect. It goes so quick. And this is like, honestly, this needs more views to it.
Let's see.
Let me get it. I think I lost it. Ah, here we go.
Uh-oh.
I'm ready. Are you ready? Get my snipping tool open. And a new... Oh, yeah. That's good right there. Paste.
This is just a still that you've...
I just took a screenshot of this.
Oh, yeah. Of the...
Yeah.
The gross tentacle tongue. Troy Baker actually had that.
And you'll also notice that, like, right before it, there's another scene, and I feel like this is on purpose. There's some meaning here. This is the still that happens right before it. Different character, but
is it
like,
gonna be the noses?
Oh no! This one is just.
It's gonna be Deborah Wilson's. The noses.
Oh okay, yeah. You get this little steamy scene, and then right after that, you get a tentacle coming out of some person's throat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there was as they're smooching, their noses do the like thing that noses actually do, and they like kind of bend because you know how our noses are like. Kind of squishy.
Yeah.
I rewound it because I was like, what? They put that in there? I was like, what? They didn't just hide that? Like, oh, okay, cool.
And when he takes off his shirt and it's animated perfectly.
Someone asked Norman Reedus, like, what was it like to kiss Lea Seydoux? And he said, just like the quote is like, it's nice.
I thought he'd be like, no, I just had to kiss some guy in a green suit.
Yeah, he was just a tennis ball. They were going to put it in later. Yeah, dude, I'm fucking all about this. And Deborah Wilson showed up in the trailer. She had two right hands. Did you see that? Can I say this? I'm a Deborah Wilson fan. I've liked her since Wolfenstein 2. And then she was in Star Wars Jedi Survivor or Fallen Order. And I was like, hey, Deborah Wilson, I like you a lot.
God, do you remember playing that moment in that game and you felt so fucking powerful and then you got your face handed to you?
Yes.
Like, so in the same sequence, you're like, I'm a powerful... No, I'm not.
Yeah, you know? No, I'm not.
That's a great part of that.
And remember she came out at the
game
awards because she played the lady who's in charge of the Suicide Squad and she came in the game awards. She was wearing, like, the leather jacket and she was like, don't you guys even move because I'm going to blow you up. And then it was really awkward, but it was like, Deborah Wilson, this was weird that you had to do this, but I'm glad to have seen you, and I'm glad you're getting work. I'm not kidding. I'm Deborah Wilson's biggest fan.
Okay. Do you want to prove it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. What is...
Go ahead. I mean, just like, you know.
Did you just open Google ready for it?
Just Googling Deborah.
Right, what was the last movie she was in?
Let me just off the dome. Last movie specifically?
Last movie she was in.
Well, she was in. There's a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm. It's going well.
I'm just remembering, like, she just does so much television.
Mm-hmm. You're scrolling through all. I mean, your memory. You're scrolling through all.
Yeah, I'm just going through. Yeah. I mean, because like, right? Because she did the Clone High in 2024 for one episode.
You were on 2024 still, huh?
damn, Deborah, you do a lot of television. This is like that the voice actor thing, though.
Is it
Baby Shark, big movie, by the way?
I thought it was Noah's Ark.
Fuck, I missed it. It's right at the top. All things considered,
of your brain, right? It's top of your brain.
No, of course. Yeah. No, she does a lot. I mean, she's in like basically every video game ever made, where she just is like a voice, or she plays like an integral character. She showed up in Forspoken, and I was like so stoked. I was like, yo, I was like, finally something fucking good. Oh,
actually, Goldbeak in 2024 was the movie she was in.
Yes, Goldbeak. Sorry, I remember. Yeah. I watched that as well.
Yeah. Don't you wish you were a voice actor sometimes?
No, this looks stressful, dude.
But being a voice actor, not like, okay, I got to be careful how I say this. I don't want to diminish their work. But like, if you would just be given a mic and you say, talk like you, and you would just be a character, and they'd put you in an animated film without you doing anything other than reading the lines in your voice. Wouldn't you love that?
Oh, yeah. Where it's just be you?
Just be you.
Read some stuff?
Yeah. Can you imagine if like they like hire Morgan Freeman? And they're like, all right, Morgan, I just want you to read these lines. Like, I have a character idea for you. And then he like goes into it. And he's like, hi there. My name is Sandy. And they're like, no, Morgan, we just want you to be you. That's all we want. Okay, I'll do that. And he goes again. He's like, hey there. My name is Sandy.
Dude, that's basically what happened with Robert Pattinson in that Studio Ghibli movie. He plays like a heron or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he just was like, can I just do like a funny, like a fucked up voice? And they're like, sure. And he's like completely unrecognizable. Like,
they still got the same paycheck.
I'll say this. Deborah Wilson was in Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots.
What part was she in? Metal Gear Solid 4.
Crying Wolf.
Okay. Can I tell you something? Worst Metal Gear game. I said it. Metal Gear Solid 4, worst one.
And you know what made, you know, the only redeeming part of it?
Crying Wolf.
Crying Wolf.
Yeah.
She was also in CSI Crime Scene Investigations for 3 episodes.
Oh.
Gosh, she was in, oh, the game, sorry. She was the voice of Storm in X-Men, the official game.
She's Halle Berry.
They replaced Halle Berry's voice with just Deborah Wilson, because you remember her? She was in American History X, uncredited.
Mm. It seems waste of her talent.
Dude, I'm being so for real with you. Every single time Deborah Wilson shows up in a video game, I'm really excited. And it sounds like I'm joking. It sounds like I'm fucking with you. I'm so not. I love this actress. She's great. I think she was also in Hamster and Gretel for 19 episodes.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
She won a Golden Rooster. Is nominated for the golden rooster for Goldbeak.
That's huge.
That's the dude, only a nomination.
21 things, by the way.
The only nomination she's gotten.
That's not true. I thought she was nominated for.
Well, according to IMDb,
I thought she was nominated for a Game Award. Am I crazy?
She could have been, but wasn't listed on IMDb. And right, until right, the right, Game right, Awards. Right. Get on IMDb.
Oh, no. Okay. She was nominated for by the BAFTA or British Academy Games Game Awards for being the character in Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
For being the character?
Yeah. What's her name?
You're a biggest fan.
Well, I love the actress. Don't love the game. I mean, like, I like the game.
I don't know the answer to this question.
You don't know the character that we're talking about from the Jedi Survivor characters. Cira Junda.
Duh.
Her name is Cira Junda? Oh, Seer.
Seer, yeah.
Seer, yeah. Can I say can I read you this list of characters?
Please.
Cira Junda.
Good.
Night Sister Marin.
Good.
BD-1.
Good.
Cal Kestis. Deborah Wilson, Grease Dritus, Bo Dacuna.
Deborah Wilson?
They just named her in the as a character.
Oh, well.
Ravis, Dagon Gara,
Bob Johnson,
Marin, Boba Fett, Ninth Sister, Eno Cordova. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for us, because I'm just reading you Star Wars characters. Kendall Ray. I think that's an actor. I think that's going to do it for us. What a good scene where you play as Deborah Wilson. Maybe the only time in memory that I've played as her in a video game. Where you fight off spoilers. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week. I want to remind you that you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. You can follow us on Twitter at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
No.
Wonderful.
All right, we'll catch you next week, y'all. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
Stop recording.